You are listening to the Fantasy Joes Podcast, your weekly dose of fun and unique fantasy football talk with a focus on Dynasty. And now, here are your hosts, Trey Barrett, Will Greenwood, and Ryan Livergood.
That's right. We are the Fantasy Joes. I'm at Roto Librarian, Ryan Livergood. We're here for another edition of Fantasy Joes, uncut, unedited, uncensored. Joining me from the home office in Minneapolis, Minnesota, we've got Will Greenwood. Will, how are you?
Hey, having a great night. We try to keep things PC here. I don't think it has to be censored. Try to keep the bad words out, but we do try to keep the good positive words going, except for my opinions on players in this episode, I guess.
That's right. We're a family show, generally speaking. And joining us from North Carolina, a man that has recently jumped on the Corey Davis hype train. It's Trey Barrett. Trey, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm looking forward to chatting tonight. I always enjoy these just kind of off the cuffs. I literally have no prepared thoughts. I've been busy at work and rookie drafts and craziness. So I'm excited to just completely off the top of the head, just spitball some Dynasty fire tonight.
But that's not entirely true, because I know you got some thoughts about Corey Davis.
Yeah, I just think it's amazing that, because, you know, one of the things about Corey Davis when he came in the league is that we kind of knew he was raw, right? He came from a small school, and, you know, there was a rawness about his game. He's only 24 years old, 24 in like 120 days. And he just put up, you know, he played half of his – I've got him pulled up on Player Profiler. Oh, sorry, profootballreference.com. So – you know, he played half of his rookie season, and then he played 16 games last year with awful quarterback play, and still put up 65 catches for almost 890 yards and 4 touchdowns. So, I mean, the guy was like a top 25 wide receiver last year with awful quarterback play in his essentially first full season in the league as a 23-year-old. So I just am like, I am just having such a hard time. And when you watch him, when you actually go back and watch those games where he put up like over 100 yards receiving, you watch him and you're like, he's got it all. I mean, make catches on the sideline, run after the catch. He's a red zone pres. I mean, it baffles me that people are bailing on him. I mean, what happened to when you used to give a wide receiver a minimum of 3 years in the league before you gave up on them? And here we are, the guy's played a season and a half, and he's just been written off. It's pretty baffling to me. And he could be a bust. I get it, but.
No, he's not a bust. So I think that's a great place to – that's the intro for the show right there, Trey. Jump aboard the Corey Davis Fantasy Joes hype train, because choo-choo, it's leaving the station, and it's going to get high. It's like it's a high-speed rail train. It's not coming back.
Can I just give a quick – but aside about Corey Davis too.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Debbie.
His counting stats in this season were fine, but the ride was not fun with Corey Davis last year. The one game he did blow up in early was that Philadelphia game that went into like four, it went almost to the they had that overtime touchdown victory or touchdown catch. I think it might have been Corey Davis who caught it.
That's right.
They also had that really weird Miami game early in the season where he ended up having 13 targets. But the way he finished the year, so let's go the last three fantasy games. This is even four if you're going to start. Let's just say the playoffs. So he had 3 targets for 2 catches against Jacksonville, 6 targets for 3 catches against the Giants, and then 5 targets for 3 catches against the Redskins, all for under a total of 100 yards. So the last 3 weeks of the season, he didn't ruin your team, but he was not doing anything for you come playoff time. And that would be one of the reasons I'd say people are down on him he was not a smooth ride at all last year. It was actually pretty horrible most of the time.
Was that when Blaine Gabbert was his quarterback, or was that when the one-armed Marcus Mariota was his quarterback? Because I'm not sure that it matters. Like,
I mean, he had a midseason stretch where he had three games again under a total of 100 yards and no touchdowns. So there's another 3 weeks where he produced nothing for you. It was 49 yards, 24 and 10.
No, I get it. But it was his first year, first full year starting in the league. 23 years old, awful quarterback situation. So I'm not trying to say, I mean, go back and look at some really historically great wide receivers and look at what they did in their second year in the NFL. And not all of them were putting up, you know, 1500 yards and 10 touchdowns like we kind of expect now. You know, after the early breakout, you know, the was it the 2014 class or 2013 class that just, you know, kind of reset the expectations of what NFL wide receivers do early on in their career. So I'm not saying that he's going to, you know, put up 1500 yards and double digit touchdowns. I just think that there is a world of opportunity there. And I'm not going to jump on all kind of crazy narratives as far as, you know, but I do not think that it's unreasonable to expect his quarterback situation to be better than it was last year. I think that if they can actually commit to the run with Derrick Henry, it's going to open up some play action. And that, I mean, teams are going to have to commit to stopping the run. And I just think that with AJ Brown there in town, with Delanie Walker back, and if Marcus Mariota is right and healthy and his ability with his feet to make some things happen, I just think that Corey Davis has an incredible opportunity. And again, it's just that natural third-year progression. I mean, that used to be the norm. You expected wide receivers to break out in their third year. So that's more my expectation with him, still believing in the talent. And
oh,
still
totally. Believing in it, I just am saying this is why people are down on him, though, is because I told you I'm on aboard the Corey Davis train. Like, I would trade Leonard Fournette maybe for Corey Davis plus, I think, the value there. But I think his third-year breakout could be right around the corner. I'm just showing that the end-of-the-year accounting stats isn't the way the ride was, you know? Like, just because he finished with almost 900 yards doesn't mean he had an overall great season week by week. So when I hear things like that in reference, but have had Corey Davis on a team, you know, where he puts up these kind of things, you have a more sour taste in your mouth than what, you know, you think.
I think you're both right, because if you owned Corey Davis last year, you did not feel comfortable starting him, certainly not in the playoffs, and a lot of times most of the year. But it also could be he breaks out in his third year, because we've seen this happen time and time again. We can't expect these guys the first couple of years to be outstanding dynasty or fantasy contributors to your team. So I think you guys are both right. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. I think that Tennessee situation is just going to be so much fun to watch. A lot of great storylines in Tennessee, as we've alluded to before.
I'm on the trade train of buying Corey Davis. So we are both right, as in you should go out and buy him. But it's referencing the saying, you know, invest in your starting lineup in dynasty. That's what you should be doing. Corey Davis has been a really poor investment so far, and that's why people are down on him. But now is the time. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he is the poster child for waiting on wide receiver next year, you know?
Go ahead, Trey.
I was just going to say, I think it just comes back to the point where if you are viewing a rookie or a second year wide receiver as a starting option for you, you're doing dynasty wrong. If you're going to take a wide receiver, I mean, you know, it's just the expectation should not be that you can rely on them. If you had the 101 that year and you drafted Corey Davis, that's fantastic. Grab a Julian Edelman, grab a Larry Fitzgerald, rely on them as starters and give Corey Davis a couple years. So I get if I did a startup last year and took Corey Davis in the fourth round and was expecting him to be a starter for me, I would be very disappointed right now. But the prices right now that he's going for are just what's baffling to me. I mean, you can get him for a, you know, last third or last fourth first round pick, right? You know, the 108 to 112, somewhere in that range, you can get a trade done for Corey Davis. And so.
And overall, the Joe's take is AJ Brown isn't better than Corey Davis.
Right now. I do not believe that AJ Brown is bad. I believe that AJ Brown is a very good wide receiver. And I really like that AJ Brown is there in Tennessee. I think it's going to help the offense overall. And I like it for Marcus Mariota. But, you know, to me, the drafting of AJ Brown did nothing for my interest in acquiring Corey Davis. As a matter of fact, it opened the door for me to acquire a couple shares a little bit cheaper than I think I could have before. And actually in one instance I had inquired and the owner had previously been like, I'm not selling Corey Davis. And then I ended up getting him for what I felt like was a pretty good bargain. So I feel like it kind of opened a buying window, but I don't think that it hurt Corey Davis's value.
And I feel like Corey Davis is a pretty big alpha and more of an outside wide receiver that moves inside. And I think that's with the slot receiver revolution we're seeing, there's a lot out there that's, hey, they can play in the slot quite a bit. Well, I feel like the best wide receivers, they cut their teeth on the outside, and then moving inside to them is super easy. Early season struggle. But then once the coaching staff comes around. So another rookie player that has been talked about with potentially not having a successful rookie year one, but it's actually a running back, and it's Miles Sanders is who I wanted to talk about. And I was trying to think of, okay, so they took him in the second round. You know, they have Jordan Howard, who's kind of like this clunker. what can we expect from him? I think I thought of a pretty good expectation for Miles Sanders this year.
All right. What's yours, Will?
Joe Mixon's rookie year. 178 carries, 626 yards, 4 touchdowns, 30 catches on 30 targets for another 287 yards. So you're putting up 900 total yards and 4 touchdowns. I think that is a good expectation as far as overall production for Miles Sanders his rookie year.
Yeah, I think that's fair because I think that Jordan Howard is going to be annoying to the Miles Sanders owner. I think he's going to vulture looks at the goal line. And Jordan Howard is a good fit for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's a good fit for their scheme. And it's going to be running back by committee. And but I do think Miles Sanders is going to be a guy you can start certainly in the flex. But if you expect him to be, running back one for your team, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Oh, and Ryan, I did pull this a little bit from, I did chime in and watch some of the YouTube live of you on there. And this was the topic. So I was thinking about,
on open bar. Yeah.
Remember Jeremy Hill, the safe old Jeremy Hill, the Bengals. And I'm not comparing the Eagles offense to the Bengals offense, but that was the Thorne and Joe Mixon side his rookie year.
Right. Oh, and it's possible. I mean, I'm not, and obviously Miles Sanders is a lot better than Jordan Howard. He's a much more complete player. And there's certainly a world where, you know, Jordan Howard disappears, you know, after weeks 5 or 6. I don't know. We've seen Jordan Howard be a good running back in this league, and we know what his limitations are, but he's good at certain things. I mean, he's got good vision, and you know, he's a good power back on the goal line. So I just don't know why Philadelphia wouldn't use that. So we'll see though. We'll see. What do you think, Trey?
Thoughts?
I think that I don't dislike the take at all. I think that there is a good, very good possibility that he does not light the world on fire, right? I think Josh Jacobs and Miles Sanders are going to have very different rookie seasons in the NFL. And you know, maybe actually that is a great thing moving forward because, you know, I think that there could be an opportunity to buy Miles Sanders if that's the case, you know, as we are, you know, reaching the midway point or even, you know, through his rookie season. I like Miles Sanders a lot. I am very high on him. I think that the things he can do are incredible. You know, when he was drafted, I think he just turned 22. Actually, he was drafted as a 21-year-old running back, and you know the production that he had at the age he did, and all of the obviously some of the knocks on him were the limited productivity, but we, you know, it's well documented who he sat behind in college and that there were a lot of draft nicks that were not holding against him, that he only really had 1 year of production. But I like what he can do. I really like that organization. You know, for me, what do we say about running backs? We want running backs in good offenses, right? And I think moving forward, Philadelphia is going to be a very good offense. So he's a guy that I'm excited to own anywhere that I can. I like his prospects moving forward. So, you know, as I just said, I think Josh Jacobs will have a better rookie season, but it would not surprise me one bit if for some reason Jordan Howard were to get injured and Miles Sanders were to get more of an opportunity. I could see Miles Sanders being like offensive rookie of the year candidate. No question. I think he's that good. I think Philadelphia's offensive line and offense in general are really good. And so I think the sky's the limit for him. But yes, I think you should temper expectations. I think, you know, running back, you know, 18 to 20 is probably where you should expect to finish this coming season from him.
And I think if you get that and you see the flashes, you should be so stoked about having taken Miles Sanders. Anyway.
So guys, guess – so who has – you guys know who has the most touchdowns in the NFL since 2017, right? It's Todd Gurley, 30.
Rushing touchdowns?
Touchdowns.
Todd Gurley, 30. I thought Jordan Howard and Latavius Murray are up high on that list.
That's right. Well, that's where I'm going with this.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Gurley is number one with 30. Alvin Kamara, second with 22. Jordan Howard, 18 touchdowns. Tied for the third most in NFL since 2017. The guy on short yardage situations, third or fourth down and two or fewer, he converts 74% of those opportunities, just behind Zeke Elliott, who's 76%. So what that tells me is that they're going to use Jordan Howard. He's really, really good at that. They're going to use him at the goal line. And they're not going to use Miles Sanders. And it doesn't mean that Miles Sanders isn't going to score some touchdowns and be the number one back. But I do think that limits his upside a little bit. So I do think that 2020, I see as the big breakout year for Miles Sanders. And Trey, I think you're right. Maybe that presents a buying opportunity, but you never know. Maybe Jordan Howard gets hurt. Who knows? And it'll be interesting to see what they do. Like, I know you laugh if you want, but does Sproles come back? I keep looking to see if Darren Sproles is going to officially retire or not. But he played a little bit last year, and he may be just annoying enough. They like him where he's going to be like the third down back and get some play. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. That's one of those intriguing storylines is Philadelphia.
I think, though, Philadelphia, they're going to ride who's ever doing the best for them. And Miles Sanders just provides better options overall, but I think there will be an adaption period. So I think they were all kind of in consensus as like temper expectations, but – don't sell. I mean, if you're picking up Miles Sanders early in a rookie draft, which I would in a non-superflex top three picks, I'd take him, Montgomery, and Josh Jacobs all before taking N'Keal Harry. But with Sanders, I feel like that's the one I'm tempering my first year expectations, waiting for the second year the most.
Yeah,
you know what's funny talking about Ryan? You're talking about, you know, Jordan Howard. Other than the previous success, I just looked this up because I was curious. Because in my own head, I kind of pictured Miles Sanders as being a little bit smaller back than Jordan Howard. Pro Football Reference has Jordan Howard at 6'2", 224, and has Miles Sanders at 5'11", 215. So he's an inch shorter and 9 pounds lighter. So, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that if Miles Sanders establishes that he can pick up those tough yards, if he's The thing I like about Miles Sanders that Jordan Howard does not offer that offense is the threat to, you know, you put Miles Sanders out in the flat, or you put him on an out route, or you put him on a wheel, and all of a sudden the defense has to adjust and account. Otherwise, he could take it to the house.
Jordan Howard,
you just don't have that. So
yeah,
I just kind of feel like if you have a guy like Miles Sanders who's an integral part of that offense, unless he's just bad at the goal line or in short yardage, I don't know automatically that we assume. I think that everyone is assuming Jordan Howard is going to have that goal line role. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's the same thing about, you know, Philadelphia's always, you know, had a committee. And you know, does this change that now that they spent a second round draft pick on a running back? So that's going to be the interesting thing. You know, those things like Chris Harris says, the things that we assume that we know, that we really just don't know.
Well, we do know that they spent a second round draft pick, so facts.
True. That is hashtag facts. Hashtag fix.
Freewood Analytics. They drafted him in the second round. Boom.
So what's next? Well, what do you else you got in your list for us?
Well, so one, the Golden Tate is a guy that I've acquired in a couple places this offseason. And not to say that it's overly comparable or that it's that close, but I do feel like Golden Tate is a guy who has shown us once that he can get over the moving team slip and downfall. His actually best season ever was his first season on the Lions. And I think he's moving into a pretty wide open depth chart on the Giants. He's going to show that his reliability and safety, at least for Eli Manning, who's going to panic throw the ball consistently. And I don't even actually know if that's true, but he did last year. But if he doesn't improve and he still likes these safe, easy passes, I think Golden Tate could be in for a massive year. His first year with the Lions, he had 144 targets to 90 catches, 1,331 yards and four tutties. he had a really good season with them coming off the bat. I think that's because he's a good crisp route runner and is great in short area. And it's not going to be he's not going to be you know, the wide receiver one overall or anything like that. But if he finishes in the top 18 this coming year, I think that you're going to get him at a massive steal. Either purchasing him for, you know, a late second rounder this year, or, you know, waiting for him in like an auction or a startup or things like that.
Thoughts? Yeah. I like, we were talking about this offline. I like Golden Tate quite a bit. I mean, I have him and I don't need to acquire him because I've got way too many shares in too many of my leagues, because I always liked him. But it's that age, it's changing the teams, and it's his age that have to give you some pause. But I think he's one of those guys that we talked about, like Julian Edelman and Larry Fitzgerald, kind of bridge players. He's a guy that could be a bridge player. I think he's going to play in the slot. I think they got to put Sterling Shepard on the outside, because I don't think Golden Tate does that very well. And there are some targets to replace in New York. So I do think he could be a you know, obviously Saquon Barkley is going to be kind of the safety net for Eli first, but I think Golden Tate could see some of those targets as well. So I like that call, Will, if you can acquire him for the right price, because I think people really are totally devaluing him for those reasons. And those are reasons to devalue him: his age and that he's with a new team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I want to look up the targets that are available for the New York Giants. While I'm doing that, Trey, what do you think of Golden Tate? Is he a guy – you think he's a good bridge guy?
I don't, honestly, because I think for probably similar price or more, I'd rather have Julian Edelman. I'd rather have Larry Fitzgerald. I'm not quite sure. I think that Sterling Shepard at this point probably has a little bit more of an inside track to be what I feel like is probably going to be the second wide receiver on that team, because I really anticipate Evan Engram to probably be – it would not surprise me one bit if Evan Engram led that team in targets. Because of the mismatch that he is and the way that they'll move him around the field. I don't dislike it. This kind of comes back to some of what, you know, Jordan McNamara talks about in Analytics of Dynasty, where, you know, he prefers to really lock up and solidify the wide receiver position because there's just such variance. And I think Golden Tate's one of those guys, you know, kind of like you mentioned, Will, about Corey Davis, where you like, you're going to plug him in your lineup maybe 7 or 8 weeks, and you're going to be glad that you did maybe 3 weeks. So I feel like if I'm going to go with the bridge guy, I want it to someone that I feel a lot more confident in their situation. And they're like Julian Edelman's a perfect example. I wonder what the price difference is right now between a guy like Julian Edelman. If you're a contender and you're looking to add a wide receiver that you can rely on week in and week out, I wonder what the price difference is. I'm sure there is one. I'm sure Edelman would be more expensive. I'm just curious what the difference in cost is.
We should look it up. So I'm looking at the target. See, Evan Engram, do you think he's going to see more than 100 targets this year, Trey?
I do, yeah.
Because, okay, so last year he saw 64. Rhett Ellison saw 35. So that's about 100 targets to tight end. I remember when I was calling Engram a buy last year, I looked at targets and I made this case for Evan Engram getting more targets, and it didn't happen. So I do wonder if we're going to see that. And even if we do, okay, so
we didn't play the full year.
I know, but Rhett Ellison has the other 35 targets. So that's about 100 targets to tight end. That's consistently what they've done the past several years.
Yeah, Engram had 115 targets his rookie year.
Okay, and that's when – I think that's maybe then his cap, 115. I mean, because that's – I mean, he was the man. So I don't see him going for more than 115. Then you've got Odell Beckham's targets, 124. He missed a little time. Yeah, let's say you give those to Sterling Shepard. I mean, that's still a lot of targets. Sterling Shepard had 107 targets. So I don't know. I mean, I think there are a lot of targets on offense. I got to go to somebody. So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, I would rather have Edelman than Golden Tate, no question, or even Larry Fitzgerald. But I think he could get Tate a lot cheaper than Edelman. I mean, because people see Edelman as like the perfect bridge guy, and they know he's going to have a big year. So I think it's going to be more expensive. So I think maybe you could get Golden Tate. And you're right, he's not a guy to build around. But I'm just saying, if your situation is bad and you need a guy, you know, like a third wide receiver, fourth wide receiver, flex guy, yeah, he's not going to boom for you very much. But he'll get you some points if you have a lot of guys you got to start in your roster. I'm with you. I'm like, I think his upside is somewhat limited, but I think he's going to be a decent starter, a decent flex guy.
Oh, I also see Golden Tate as like a 2-3 year plug-in. I see Julian Edelman is like one, and you're lucky.
You think Golden Tate's got 2 or 3 years left there?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I've never been a huge Golden Tate guy. I know he's had a couple years where he had some decent production, and I don't know. I haven't looked and see what his contract is. I know there's a lot of transitions going on there. I will say,
I'm trying to pull it up, but Golden Tate's had monster production as far as catches go, at least.
Yeah, but I think he's only had like 3 years over 1,000 yards.
Well, here's the other thing too. Yeah, 3 years over 1,000 yards, but here's the thing. August 2nd, he's going to turn 31. So he's definitely getting in that danger zone for age, and that does make me nervous. So I don't know if you can bank on multiple years. I mean, you could try, but, you know, that's for me, like, danger zone. If I get acquired Golden Tate, I'm seeing him as he's going to help me in 2019, and that's that. Yeah. And anything else is a bonus. It's possible.
The thing is, he's younger. Yeah, maybe 2 years. Because, I mean, Edelman's going to turn 34, right?
Yeah, Edelman, honestly, is probably just a 1 year. But the thing I think with Edelman, especially with Gronk on, you know, I think Edelman's a guy that's a lock for 100 catch if he's healthy. And that's not, you know, I mean, he's only played 16 games, I think, twice in the last. He's just a guy. I mean, look at that playoff stretch. I mean, he just was dominant when he came back last year.
How many years, Trey? I missed it. I cut out for a second. How many years has he played 16?
I think he's only played – I looked the other day. I want to say he's only played 16 games like a couple times in his career. You know, he's played double-digit games all year, almost every year. I think that he's played 9 1 year or 2 years. Like, you know, he's not a guy that's played, you know, the full season often.
Yeah, yeah. So – yeah, from 2009 to 2018, he played, you know, 11 games, 15 games, 13 games, 8 games, 16, 14, 9, 16, 12. Yeah, so that is the one thing about Edelman with his age. I'm definitely worried about a guy that's going to be 33 going into the year. I mean, I still like him as a bridge guy, but you have to have that in the back of your head that this is a guy that's a likely candidate to miss some time based on his history and his age. But yeah, if he stays healthy, he's going to be awesome. He's going to have a great year.
Yeah, and it's just one of those, you know, I think that's one of the things that I'm evolving on as far as the wide receiver position. You know, there's guys that you know, feel good about owning and you own them and you kind of like them, you trade for them. And then it gets in season, right? Like, you know, I mean, Christian Kirk, maybe right now, maybe that's a bad example because they just drafted two more wide receivers that are the new hotness. But, you know, you think about these guys that you acquire as wide receivers and you're kind of like, oh, you know, I like having this guy on my team. Like Sammy Watkins, maybe over the last couple of years, even when healthy, right? Like last year, you know, there were a couple of games where Sammy Watkins absolutely went off. And there were a couple of games where he gets you like 7 points. So it's like, oh, Sammy Watkins, right? All this potential, like dynasty, darling, and but how often are you really excited? And that's why I think sometimes, you know, the guys that get the volume are just a little safer. And those options are dwindling, right? I mean, you know, some of those guys last year, you know, Demaryius Thomas, right? I mean, kind of a shell of himself. Emmanuel Sanders was one. We're not even sure, you know, how quickly he's going to get back on the field out in Denver. And Julian Edelman with the issues, as far as, you know, playing 16 games, it's getting harder and harder to find those guys that can be bridge options. And two, I think that the NFL offenses are just becoming more and more adept at, you know, utilizing different guys in different roles. And you know, you're just not seeing, I actually just looked up the most targeted players in the NFL last year. And it's a pretty sharp decline. Like, you know, there were, you know, several tight ends, but, you know, your top guys in targets, 170, 169, and 169 for Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Devontae Adams, right? Your real alpha wide receivers. But then if you go down to like number 15 at the wide receiver position, you know, it's like less than 110, you know? So the drop off from the number one wide receiver to like the number 10 and number 12 wide receiver as far as targets is, you know, like three or four targets a game. So, you know, there's really a limited number of guys that are getting that kind of dedicated targets. And I think that kind of speaks to the way that the NFL game is evolving. So it's going to be harder and harder. And it may, you know, you may continue to see those alpha wide receivers grow even more in value because of that, you know, because when you have an Odell Beckham or DeAndre Hopkins, the ability, not just the longevity, but the ability to stick them in your lineup week in and week out and not even think twice about it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Trey, and something that we don't hear enough, because we talk about so much about the shortage of like elite three down running backs, you know, like, well, once you get out of the first round of a startup, you got like five or six guys and then there's a big drop off, and there's some validity to that. But I think the same holds true for the wide receiver position for sure. You know, once you get past those top options, there's a big drop in targets and you know, upside, in my opinion, too. So it's not just a running back thing. And those wide receivers last a lot longer than those running backs typically. So and
it's a lot easier to handcuff a running back than it is a wide receiver. Like if DeAndre Hopkins goes down, Will Fuller isn't absorbing, you know, 75 more targets over the last eight games of the year.
Well, and that's where I think, you know, another not, I mean, we're like just, this is just shameless advertising for Jordan McNamara, but you know, is the concept, and there's others that have, you know, perpetuated the same thought process, and it's not just limiting yourself to your own handcuffs, but owning high value handcuffs, you know, owning guys that have value if the starter were to go down. Like, I think that the concept of handcuffing your own starters is pretty well endorsed across Dynasty and even more so maybe in redraft. But I think owning, you know, taking six or eight of the highest level handcuffs across the NFL or the best situations, right? Like the Daryl Henderson, maybe Daryl Henderson's not the best backup running back in the NFL, but we know that if something happens to Todd Gurley, you're putting Daryl Henderson in your lineup every single week at running back in that Rams offense. So, you know, whether you own Todd Gurley or not, the value of Daryl Henderson is immense, because if Todd Gurley goes down, whether he's on your roster or someone else's roster, you all of a sudden now have a week in, week out RB1. So, you know, the concept, not just of having your own handcuffs, but having handcuffs of other high level, high opportunity guys across the league that, if the starter in front of them goes down, they're immediately a plug-and-play starter.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Jordan Howard eats too many burgers in week three and can't make – no, I'm just kidding. I actually like Jordan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, we're on Jordan Howard. I mean, come on.
Just came out.
Man, by the time the season starts, Jordan Howard may be the backup to own, right? If Miles Sanders lights the world on fire in preseason and he's all the rage, and Jordan Howard may be the guy, because what happens if Sanders gets hurt? I mean – you know, Jordan Howard may – I mean, he's got 2 years of rushing for over 1,200 yards in the NFL out of three. So
he's got to be done in Philly after this year, right? It's the fourth year of his contract. They're not going to re-sign him, right?
No. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Capture other places. So one handcuff that I was talking about that, again, it came up. And so I just wanted to look into it. And Ryan, it's the Crafts and Drafts League, when we picked up Latavius Murray to back up Alvin Kamara, I think that's his best purpose. Did you guys see what Murray did last year? Or even, I mean, the year prior, he had a lot more starts and a much, much better year. But I think we're seeing, unless Alvin Kamara goes down with a serious injury this year, I think we've seen the ceiling of what Murray can do. And again, I don't think it's a week in and week out starter, or a guy you want to put in your flex. And I've just heard that quite a bit, is that he could be an easy flex play this year. And I kind of disagree, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that.
I think people are assuming he's going to take over the Mark Ingram role. And if you look at what Mark Ingram, I'm not necessarily saying that's right or wrong. But I think you bring up a fair point, because people said this the same about Mark Ingram last year too. It's like, okay, he missed the first four games, but you can still plug Mark Ingram into that Saints offense and he's going to do well for you. And Mark Ingram was, he had some good games, but then he had some pretty poor games as well, including some, you know, poor games as you're making the playoff push. So, you know, so he had some big weeks, but then he had some not so big weeks. But, you know, if you look at what he did in a full point PPR league, he had three games over 20 fantasy points, but then he has, you know, a 6.2, 4.6, 4.8, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on how you look at your flex, right? If you want to put a guy in your flex that you feel can boom a week, I think that could be Latavius Murray. But if you want kind of a steady Eddie guy in your flex, then, you know, then Latavius Murray is probably not your guy. So it depends on how you approach it, I think. Trey, how do you approach your flex positions?
Well, that all depends on the way that I built my teams. You know, ideally, I'm not flexing Latavius Murray except for bye weeks. So, you know, my ideal situation is that I'm, you know, putting someone in the flex with a little bit more opportunity than Latavius Murray. But every team's different, right? I actually like Latavius Murray, and Will, I kind of feel like that the opportunity for him, I think that New Orleans is, you can see the usage of Kamara when Ingram was out, and then how they kind of backed off his usage when Ingram came back. I think that they are very much a win now team. I think they're very much a, you know, the goal for that organization this year in the NFL is to win the Super Bowl, no question. And so I think they're thinking of the long game. They don't care about your fantasy team. And I don't think Sean Payton's going to try and give Alvin Kamara 25 touches every single game. So I do think Latavius Murray. I think Latavius Murray, if he plays, if Latavius Murray stays healthy this year, I think he's a lock for 10 touchdowns. And I think he's almost a certain lock for 800 or 900, you know, yards from scrimmage. I think he's going to get used. They actually paid him. He actually got more guaranteed money than Mark Ingram did. So they didn't just say, oh, well, we don't really need a 1B running back. We just need a backup. You know, they went out and gave this guy, you know, it's not a huge – it's a four-year, $14 million contract that he got. You know, with, I think like half of that being guaranteed. And so I do think Latavius Murray has, you know, I think one of the things that you look at Latavius Murray the last couple of years, he's in Minnesota running behind an awful offensive line. And he's going now to New Orleans, one of the best offenses and one of the better offensive lines in the league. So I actually love Latavius Murray. I do think he's going to have flex value this year. And if something did happen to Kamara, I think his value would skyrocket. He's a guy that I will be targeting without a doubt in when redraft season comes around. So I think he's a guy that has really, really nice upside because of the, again, plays in a great offense. I think he's going to have standalone value, but as a backup to Kamara, I think he's got immense value.
Yeah, I do think the one difference between him and Ingram is the fact that Ingram has the ability, like Mark Ingram's a bit of a pass catcher. You know, I don't think they're going to target him too much. So I think that helps out with Kamara a little bit more in the passing game. Because if you look at what he was averaging, he's averaging about 2 to 3 targets a game. And I don't know that Latavius Murray is going to happen. Maybe one target a game if he's lucky. So we'll see. I don't know. So Will, you're totally out on Latavius Murray then? Like you just don't buy it. You just don't think he's going to have a decent year.
I would never say I'm totally out on any player. I just think that when it comes to asking price and where he's going, I mean, would you rather have Latavius Murray or Lamar Miller for this upcoming season in the future?
For that's dynasty?
The kind of value that I'm seeing, yeah.
That's a good question, because I don't know, because I think with correct me if I'm wrong, but I think with Murray's contract, they suspect that you know, he's going to be there at least for a couple of years. Where I think with Lamar Miller, he's definitely out in Houston. I don't think there's any question about that. So, and I don't know that Lamar Miller has that, you know, much better of a year. I mean, that Houston offensive line is still going to be crummy. And I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. I got to say, I'm leaning towards Latavius Murray.
Murray, Kenyon Drake.
I'll let Trey
that's
take
Kenyon
this one.
Drake. That's Kenyon Drake for me, because I think he's got an opportunity to be the starter there. And he looked pretty good last year when he got the opportunity. I think his upside is a little better for Dynasty. You know, Latavius Murray, I mean, Latavius Murray's got a very, very short window. You know, he's 28 years old. But you know, Ryan, quickly to your point, Latavius Murray in his one season that he played 16 games actually caught 41 passes. And I think Mark Ingram's like caught 50 passes at the most in a year that he's played in the NFL. So I kind of don't agree. I think Latavius Murray I think Mark Ingram probably is a better pass catcher, but I don't think Latavius Murray is, an incapable. I think
he's not Jordan Howard, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, no. because
pass catching stats that best year.
The very next year, he caught 33 passes. Latavius Murray did. So, he had almost 80 catches in two seasons.
Was he sharing a backfield with Alvin Kamara, who's one of the best catching backs in the NFL, though? That's my question. Not saying he's going to get back into any targets, but.
His contract is weird. That's the only thing I would hang my hat on is, like, buying Latavius Murray is that he's there for at least a couple of years. I mean, his dead cap in year three when he's going to be 30 is $1.7 million. That's very odd to me. So was he that in demand? Did Minnesota misuse him that poorly? One, wouldn't be shocked, guys. So,
well, Minnesota's offensive line. I think Latavius Murray, when he looked really, really good, was in Oakland behind a really good offensive line. Minnesota's offensive line is dreadful. So I think Latavius Murray, he's not the kind of guy that's going to be able to create yards. If he doesn't get yards blocked for him, so I think his opportunity behind that offensive line in New Orleans and in that offense is much better than the opportunity he had in Minnesota. So I think the reason his numbers didn't look nearly as good in Minnesota was the quality of the offensive line.
Without the benefit of advanced stats in front of me, his yards per carry, which is not my favorite stat at all, in Oakland was the exact same as it was in Minnesota, though. It's not like – at what point is it you and not just the offensive line? His highest yards per carry was – I mean, I'm not going to count the first one where he only had 82 rushes. Was 4.1, and that was his previous season. We had 140. I just don't think – I think maybe we're overvaluing Latavius Murray's 112 touchdown season. Is he not Jeremy Hill on the back end of his career?
I do think it does depend on your offense a lot too. For example, Jordan Howard, his big years in Chicago were when his, the offense was kind of like, we're going to focus on running the ball. Then when Matt Nagy came to town, what did he average, like 3.7 yards or something like that last year? And did he get less talented or was it the offense? I mean, I know generally speaking, the same pieces on the offensive line, but let's be clear. The New Orleans Saints offense is a much better place to be than the Minnesota Vikings offense. And not only a better offensive line, but just a better system, more chances to score at the goal line. So,
If you've never shown, like, Jordan Howard's best season crushes Latavius Murray's by far.
Right.
Minus touchdowns. Latavius Murray had 1 12 touchdown season. I remember that. It's awesome for him. He was scoring I think it came mid season. He was scoring like 2 touchdowns a game, but yeah. I don't think that's a fair comparison at all. The thing is, the contract is what may – if we trust New Orleans' talent evaluators, I'm buying into Latavius Murray. So I would kind of decide on that. And I don't want to be the Latavius Murray hater. I don't hate Latavius Murray. I'm just saying I don't think he's locked in for double-digit touchdowns in this massive role. I just think you're going to see a change in offense and a change in committee because he's never been that efficient. And, again, I'm sorry, guys, if you guys have this, the advanced stats on him are like how many forced tackles missed or how yards after contact, things like that, I would like to see. But he just isn't a huge – he's not a big pass catcher. So just I would just taper – like, to me, Trey, like, the lock for double-digit touchdowns to me is much lower.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think that, I think one of the things, too, Will, you have to consider, Latavius Murray's a late-round guy. I mean, this is not a guy that's going to go in the top 10 rounds, top 12 or 13 rounds. I'm not sure, we're not really at redraft season. I don't know where his ADP is going to settle out, but for me, he's like a back end of the roster kind of guy. Like, I would rather have Lamar Miller, no question, in redraft and in dynasty, because Lamar Miller is a starter on a good offense. And I think Lamar Miller has a really good chance. I mean, how many years in a row has he had 1,000 all-purpose yards? I mean, I know it's not sexy. And I know that it's not, that was very well documented last offseason when Ryan was, talking about Lamar Miller as a buy. You were like, whoa. I know he had 1,000 yards last year, but I owned him and started him. And it stunk. Yeah. Like, right. So,
but I bought him again and started to give him, and it still stunk.
Well, but again, you know, anytime we talk about any of these guys, right, it all comes down to cost, right? I mean, are we buying Latavius Murray if we can get it for a 2024? Well, yeah, sure, because if Kamara gets hurt, I've all of a sudden probably got an RB1 on my hands. Am I going to give a 2022 for him? No, not a chance. So, you know, I think sometimes when we talk about these guys, it's relative to cost. I think Latavius Murray, I would put Latavius Murray into the category of being a higher end backup with some ability to flex on a regular basis.
Sure, I love the opinion of not selling for a 2022, because I feel like that's been kind of like almost what I've seen in leagues and heard elsewhere. And I actually think we're on the same page. Like, absolutely. As far as cost goes.
Yeah, I think the only reason you want to do that, if let's say you're an Alvin Kamara owner and you really want to lock up the backfield, and maybe you pay that 2022, but yeah, I think beyond that, a little much.
Yeah. Well, and that's just one of those things that I think, so, you know, to give a 2022 for Murray because you owe Kamara. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ryan, because you guys may think differently, but I think those are the kind of short-sighted moves that get people in trouble in Dynasty. Because, you know, last year, if you were going into the year last year and you were to list the top 7 backup running backs to own in the NFL last year, like C.J. Anderson and Damian Williams wouldn't have been even on the radar, right? I mean, you're probably going through the top 20. And those are the guys winning. You know, Tim Hightower years and years ago would have never even been in the conversation. And so I think sometimes, you know, like Will said earlier, you know, if I own player X, then I want to own his handcuff. And so I don't know. I've never been one that really has been very diligent about seeking after handcuffs, and was just lucky. The couple shares of Damian Williams that I got last year were in redraft, and I just kind of lucked into it.
I think it depends. Like obviously the counter example to this, I think you're right. There are more examples of this where you don't overpay for a handcuff because you're not sure who the handcuff is going to be. I agree with you, but James Conner is a great example for Pittsburgh. Like, going into the year, he thought, oh, I got Le'Veon Bell, I want to lock up the Pittsburgh backfield. Obviously, you pay a second round pick for James Conner, and that's a, you know, kind of steal at the, you know, today. So, but I know that's kind of like an outlier. So I guess if you've got one of those elite running backs, I don't know that it's necessarily a horrible thing to do. I mean, I think it depends on your philosophy. How conservative of an owner are you? But you're right. There aren't too many of those guys. Maybe Alvin Kamara is the only one that has a clear handcuff, that we think is a clear handcuff anyway, because Zeke certainly doesn't. Well, I mean, we think it's Mike Weber, I think. CMC doesn't.
He might be having surgery.
I mean, David Johnson, what is the guy's name? Chase Edmonds from last year. I don't know that that's really his handcuff. So I don't know that there are too many other than Alvin Kamara, maybe the only one that has that clear, you know, handcuff of the elite guys, right?
Christian McCaffrey and Cam Newton.
Because like in Los Angeles, who's Todd Gurley's handcuff? You said Darrell Henderson, but are we sure it's not Malcolm Brown? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it very well may be Malcolm Brown. I think Darrell Henderson's going to be an interesting guy. And I don't remember, did they take him in the third round, right?
Yeah, they traded up.
Third round.
Fourth running back off the board?
I think third, actually. He went before David Montgomery. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I view Darrell Henderson. You know, Darrell Henderson's a guy that I probably view. The only reason I would suspect maybe Darrell Henderson has – I mean, he's a small guy, right? So nobody's going to get Todd Gurley touches if Todd Gurley goes down. I mean, C.J. Anderson did last year practically, but, you know, I don't know. I think what we saw, you know, my take on them taking Darrell Henderson in the third round was them saying, we can't be giving Gurley, you know, 30 touches a game every single week, right? Because just like we talked about with the Saints, you know, Sean McVay doesn't give two rips about your fantasy team and how many touches Todd Gurley's getting in your lineup. He wants to win the Super Bowl, right? He had a taste he was outclassed by one of the greatest. And, you know, the motivation in that organization is to get back to the Super Bowl with the Super Bowl. And they're not going to do that by riding Gurley into the ground. So, you know, I think that they wanted an opportunity to, I mean, Malcolm Brown is probably really good as a backup, but I think Daryl Henderson is electric enough to be able to come in and spell Todd Gurley, maybe take on some third down work. So you know, the draft capital too, I think, you know, that going back to James Conner, you know, you could kind of see the writing on the wall, right? I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but Le'Veon Bell had just held out one time. So, you know, last offseason, I think, you know, we probably were sleeping a little bit on the fact that what happened could happen. And I think in this day and age in the NFL too, you know, it's not, you know, who would have thought we would have seen Odell Beckham traded, right? Who would have thought that Antonio Brown wasn't going to be playing for the Steelers this year? And so I think some of these guys where they're handcuffs, you know, like Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison's a great example. I feel like people are sleeping on Alexander Mattison because you know, they think, well, oh, Dalvin Cook, right? Because they view Dalvin Cook as this elite running back. Dalvin Cook can't stay on the field. And the Minnesota Vikings have just paid a quarterback and two wide receivers big-time money. Like, they're in it to win now. And so if Dalvin Cook this year struggles to stay on the field, it would not shock me one bit for 12 months from now for Alexander Mattison to be going into 2020 as a starting running back for the Vikings. You know, I think sometimes we as dynasty owners get locked up on players and that they're just locked into these starting roles or that they're not going to be traded or they're not going to be cut. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
I think the Bengals are a great example of that. They're Jeremy Hill, they're Giovanni Bernard second round, then Jeremy Hill second round, then Joe Mixon second round. And Trey, I think you bring up an interesting point with this conversation is it's not, maybe it's not necessarily handcuffing, but it's what's the cost of value insulation in dynasty. And I think one of the trades the trade we did where I sent you the 212 in a super flex for Carlos Hyde, to me, that's a great win because you don't really have a great use for Carlos Hyde overall. I had Damian Williams. I feel like that 212, my likelihood of hitting on that's pretty low. And I would rather, you know, maybe Carlos Hyde wouldn't step in if Damian Williams were to get banged up or he kind of struggles early in the season. But I mean, Carlos Hyde had draft capital in the past and at least is a decent player. But it's that balance between are you straight trying to guess the handcuff and you want that, or are you trying to insulate value of what's on your team and then what that translates to cost, you know? It's all about that cost, which is why we you know, even talk about this. Is why it's so much fun because everybody's cost is different.
Yeah, well said. And I think getting back to your point, circling this back around to Darrell Henderson, you know, I've heard some talk that, you know, McVay knows he needs to change up his offense, that they're not going to be able to show that three receiver set look on the field, and Henderson gives them that other element to change up their offense a little bit. And so just the change in the nature of the NFL, we're just kind of assuming that all three Los Angeles Rams wide receivers are going to kind of do what they did before. It's like, you can start all those guys. Just pick your favorite. Pick Robert Woods. Pick Cooper Kupp. Pick Brandon Cooks. But we don't know what the offense is going to be like. One of those guys may be left out in the cold this year because he may decide he's going to change up his offense. And, you know, because the guy is a offensive mastermind. So you're right. We make these assumptions. We assume that these guys are locked into their roles. And I think that what was fascinating about 2018 and the offseason after is it's proven to us that we shouldn't necessarily make these assumptions. And, you know, we shouldn't invest in talent and kind of see what these teams are telling us and then make decisions from there. And that's why it is fun, because it's, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, if we knew what was going to happen, we would just, you know, stick to our cheat sheets when we draft. And we know all these. We look at projections. Well, we know that this guy's going to score this many points, this many touchdowns. So, but it never happens that way, and that's why it's so much fun.
Yeah, and I'm still holding off one more year on Cleveland.
Listen, have you guys run into any? Yeah, I know, man. Will last year was hating on the Cleveland Browns.
I still
man,
am.
What?
Let's see him produce a winning season.
Oh my gosh! No, you said last year. You said I don't want to own any.
I still don't. I'd rather sell them for what their values are
fantasy.
Now.
Fantasy. You know, this is going to be pretty funny. It's just completely coincidence, and I don't buy into this at all. But if you run into someone that's like a super big Dalvin Cook apologist in any of your leagues and your chats, and you want to really rile them up, just tell them that Alexander Mattison's getting paid more money this year than Dalvin Cook. Tell them to follow the money. They drafted Madison. They're paying Madison more money. They drafted him to be the starter. So just get ready for it. And then just watch the meltdown happen.
I have a question. Do you guys think that some of the, I don't think Madison's getting hated in the dynasty community, because there are people like Will, how are you on Madison? Are you just kind of like, he's okay? Because you know that the trainer are big on Madison. How do you feel about him?
What's big though? Like, oh, we're going to take him late second round? I don't think that's very big on anybody.
Well, I mean, in some situations, I'll take him like mid second round.
So who?
I like to get him later, but
yeah. What are your decisions that you're making over Madison? Are you taking Madison over Damian Harris? Are you taking him over Darrell Henderson? Are you taking him over, you know, what are the other options there? Are you taking him over Hakeem Butler?
Oh yes, yeah, for sure, absolutely. That's easy.
No question. Oh, see, I'm thinking I'm rolling the dice with Hakeem Butler.
Okay.
That's so fine. I mean, you got like a 12% chance of him turning in a top 24 season. So,
but like, I'd rather have the percent of what I see as an alpha dog producing a higher season than the running back 23 does nothing for me on my fantasy team.
Well, you know, I think that's not necessarily true, because I think the likelihood of Alexander Mattison hitting a running back 20 season is about 10 times as likely as Hakeem Butler putting in a wide receiver, top 12 wide receiver season. That's just looking at, you know, historical. No, here's for me.
I think it's totally fair for what it's worth. Just to say, yeah. I'm not like Alexander Mattison.
No, I like Hakeem Butler's a guy I like. The draft capital, you know, hurt, and I'm not getting many shares of him. I have gotten, I think, one share where he went. Oh, no, it was an auction. That's right. But here's the thing for me and Alexander Mattison, and we saw it in League of Ballers, right? I don't remember where I took him. Was it the two? It was early in the second.
205. Because I thought him out of the 204. I decided to trade and get a 2022nd instead. And that's a lot of that was I was distracted, and I feel like I should have got more value out of that deal, but I was super busy. But I'm happy with the deal. But yeah, 205.
Yeah. So I had taken him.
I wanted Hardman. I wanted that second so badly. Sorry to interrupt.
No. That's fine.
Nicole Hardman was on the board.
Yeah. So for me, you know, everyone was like, well, you know, I shouldn't say everyone, but there was definitely, and it's not the first time it's happened, because I've taken him in the early second in a couple other leagues. One was a 0.1 point per carry, and then another was just a PPR league where I needed to add some running backs. And so the thing for me is that I think we've become so accustomed to what like DLF is putting out there and what we're seeing on Twitter. Like, to me, I think it's more egregious to take Mecole Hardman at 112 than it is to take Alexander Mattison at 205. I think it's significantly more egregious. Yet, the majority of people, because of what they're consuming,
and we're talking telling them that Mecole,
it doesn't matter. Any format, straight PPR, one quarterback, I would rather have Alexander Mattison than Mecole Hardman, no questions asked. You take Mecole Hardman at the 205, and all of a sudden you got a value. You take Alexander Mattison at 205, and it's like a reach. So I just think we have very short memories, and people forget that Kareem Hunt was taken in the second round of a lot of rookie drafts because he was going to be the backup to Spencer Ware in Kansas City. You know, Alvin Kamara was taken in the second round, late first round of a lot of rookie drafts, because he was going to be the backup to Mark Ingram in New Orleans. So you can go down the line and look at these running backs that are taken, and the probability of them hitting is just so much greater. You know, he was drafted in the third round, and he's behind a guy that has missed 50% of his NFL starts in 2 years. It's a small sample size, but I think that he screams opportunity. And so for me, it's worth spending that early second round pick. And I just think that people are not willing to just step up and get their guy. They're kind of going off of what, you know, the community and what the overall pulse is.
I was thinking about this the other day, cause I had that 204, which I traded out of, and like that Mecole Hardman was there. And I thought about this more. I think it was, I have to give credit to Katie Flower on a UTH Premium pod talking about this, that she kind of likes taking Mecole Hardman in, you know, at a certain price point, because there is this world where even if he does nothing in the NFL, even if he's a complete bust preseason, remember Kenny Galladay had those big years, you know, preseason games where he blew up. He has some, you know, Mahomes is out there, hits him on a perfect play, and no one's around him, scores a long touchdown. Suddenly, don't you think you could flip him for a 2021st pretty easily? I think that's a reality. And I thought to myself, like, man, I should have just taken him, especially the team I have, just for that upside, that just to hold on to him as like this guy that I know I don't believe in that I'm going to flip. Because if he looks in the preseason, all of a sudden I could easily cash him in for 2021st. So I think that's maybe the counter argument to taking Madison there, is that if you took Hardman, and I know it's a chance, maybe he doesn't do anything in the preseason, but if he flashes, then you flip him for value. And wouldn't you rather have a 2021st than Alexander Madison, Trey? I'm just playing devil's advocate. I like the pick that you made.
I think this is the range where I'm not going to scream at anybody for taking anybody. I just like it's we're in the mid second round of a terrible, like not a terrible, but a less fun rookie class.
Yeah, and that's where I'm super into it. I cannot wait to be 12 months from now, because I think that this 2020 class hype is just getting so out of control. Like, don't get me wrong, I love those running backs that are going to be at the top of next year's draft. But I am beginning to believe that potentially that the 203 to 206 range of this draft could be better than the 203 to 206 range of next year's draft. Superflex, that might be a little different, because I think the quarterback class next year is strong. But I don't think you're going to have two elite tight ends that are going in the first round like you do this year. And I don't think that you have the depth at wide receiver. There's a few guys at the top, I think, next year that are good. But, you know, I feel like that it's going to be interesting. I just can't wait to be 12 months and then even 24 months down the road and be able to reflect back and see where there was more value available. Ryan, I just don't – I typically don't tend to draft people hoping that they see a jump in value. I heard Katie Flower mention that same thing, and I don't hate it. I think that's a – like you mentioned, there's a point where it's like I talked about a while back when we were talking about Daniel Jones, you know, like I'm happy taking him in the early second of a super flex rookie draft if I've got several picks, right? If it's a luxury, you know, like if I've got the 203, 204, 205, and I grab, you know, Harrison, Madison, and Mecole Hardman sitting there, sure, you know, as a luxury pick, if you want, you know, if you like the upside. But by and large, I try not to do that. I try not to draft people, but I don't hate the strategy. Yes, easily. I mean, he could easily be worth, and yes, I would much rather have a 2020. Well, I much rather is probably a strong word, but.
And Trey, I'm with you. I mean, I'm at the end of the day, pretty conservative player. So, I mean, I wouldn't have done that, because that's just not my, because there's risk to that. Because once again, you know, I don't believe in Hardman long-term, and maybe he doesn't flash, and maybe he has a letdown year, and you're, you know, and then Kansas City drafts the wide receiver first round next year, and then all of a sudden you've got this guy that isn't worth anything. So I just thought it was interesting philosophy, and I thought for my team, it's like, oh, maybe I should have gone for an upside pick like him there. But I have no regrets. I mean, I probably could have got more had I had more time to focus on shopping that pick around. But yeah, no, it's interesting. And this class is interesting. I think the second round is interesting. I think these wide receivers that go in the second are a fascinating lot of guys. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Hardman and Paris Campbell. Although Paris Campbell's kind of snuck up, it seems, a little bit. I think when the rookie draft started, I saw him going in the second round. But I think that world might be behind us. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what this class looks like a year from now versus the 2020 class, for sure. For sure. And we just don't know, right? T.J. Hockenson wasn't on anyone's radar a year ago, nor was Josh Jacobs, right?
That's a lie. I'm just
kidding. It was on Will's radar.
Dude, I mean, those are guys. Yeah, we did. Like week one this past year, I was like, you guys got to check out Hawk. Or it was like week four.
I do remember.
And I was like, this dude's good. And yeah, all of a sudden, he escalated from a nobody to a top 10. That was one of the most wild beginning to end college seasons I think you've ever seen. From nothing to something at a tight end.
Ugh. Yeah, and there'll be a couple of guys that'll do that. That'll come out of nowhere, and then there'll be guys that we're high on now that will just crash and burn, and they'll be, you know, guys we were high on that just the NFL just doesn't believe in. And they
like Kelvin Harmon, man. I mean, he was like a top 10 Debbie pick last offseason. Yeah.
Right.
And he's just, I mean, although there's, you know, he's going in the second and third round of rookie drafts.
So I was thinking too, you guys hear that thing where the Ravens asked Daniel Jones to try out at tight end?
Yeah.
Do you think though that was just like a really, really big slap in the face because they draft too many tight ends all the time and then drafted like a wide receiver as a quarterback? I'm just kidding. I like Lamar Jackson, but like I feel like maybe they just did that just so they could put that out there in the news eventually. Like, oh yeah, we asked Daniel Jones to try to start in. Like, we need more tight ends on the Ravens. That's our issue.
It's funny because, you know, last year that's what that people were saying, that Lamar Jackson needed to change the wide receiver to get into the NFL. So I think it's ironic that the team that drafted him as a quarterback.
I feel like they were just trying to slap him in the face for no reason. Not for no reason. I mean, the NFL is
competitive
on all levels.
Hey, guys, we should probably wrap up the show here.
Okay, hold on. One quick one. Devin Singletary or Alexander Mattison?
Oh, that's easy for me, Madison.
Yeah. The only running backs in this class that I would take over Madison are three guys at the top and Damian Harris. And Darrell Henderson, I go back and forth on. I have been leaning Madison just because I like his body of work and you know, opportunity. And so those are the only guys I'm at the running back position I'm taking. Harris and the three guys go on the top of the first.
I might go Justice Hill over Madison. I'd be on the fence there.
Wow.
I like Justice Hill though. I mean, me too. He could, you know, if Mark Ingram breaks down, he could be the starting running back there. And he's electric, man. He put up awesome numbers.
But it's hedging risk on both of them, right? I mean, Dalvin Cook hasn't played. Man, like, he's never been really beneficial to your fantasy team, it seems like. And so Madison could step into that. And then Hill, for Ingram, to me, in Baltimore, it's a very interesting – I'm just trying to gamble on him not being healthy the whole year with that. It's the same thing. But I just like Justice Hill more because of athleticism. And that could just be being an athleticism snob. And I'm not, but in this case –
All right, guys, let's get out of here. We are at FF Joes on Twitter. We're the Fantasy Joes. We appreciate you listening. You can also become a Patreon supporter. Go to patreon.com/Fantasy Joes and check it out. Patreon supporters get a bonus episode twice a month during the off season, so you want to check that out. So on behalf of Trey Barrett and Will Greenwood, I'm Ryan Livergood, and we are the Fantasy Joes.
Keep yourself up and quadrant over.